Hello and welcome to F1 Explains. I'm Katie Osborne and my partner in this is Christian Hugo. This is the official F1 podcast all about answering your questions from all over the world. Now remember, you can send your questions as an email or you could record a voice note for us. Send it to F1Explains at F1.com. We put your questions to big name people behind the scenes at F1. Hey, and if you're new, welcome. We are so glad to have you. Christian is usually in the UK where we record these episodes, but he is not there today. Christian, where in the world is Christian Hugo? Did you guys have where in the world is Carmen Sandiego? Where are you today?
Katie, I loved that. I'm glad sending me here has got me able to hear you singing. That's fantastic.
Nobody ever wants me to sing ever again. That will never happen. That will absolutely never happen. But for where in the world is Carmen Sandiego or Christian Hugo, I'm happy to do it.
I disagree. I loved it. Katie, I'm at the Bahrain International Circuit here at pre-season testing, where as we record this podcast, the sun's just coming down, just disappearing over the white grandstand behind me, and the palm trees are all emblazoned with lights, which are just turning on as evening descends on the Formula One paddock at pre-season testing.
Wow. You said that, like, magically. That was
really nice. I wouldn't say magic. But Formula One does feel magical, doesn't it? Particularly the start of the season, everyone back at school feel. It feels very nice.
Yeah, I just love the fact that I'm sitting here drinking my cup of coffee, waking up, and you are describing the sun going down there and palm trees waving in the wind. Anyways, we have had so many questions about preseason testing, and I think it's because it's like this excitement. There's an energy around the season, and then there's like this black curtain that kind of covers this preseason testing, and people probably assume they know what's going on, but really, do they know what's going on? Mills from Kansas City, why do the teams not get to test their new cars until preseason testing? And why is testing set up the way it is? And Zoe asks, what are the teams actually trying to learn from preseason testing? What data are they collecting? And how is it used? And Christian, get this, we've also had questions about the special tools teams use at preseason testing. Alice in Australia and Charlotte want to know about the bright-colored Flovis paint that they put on the cars. And during testing, you can see cars running around with these huge, complex metal contraptions bolted to them. Dylan in Philadelphia wants to know what they are and why are they used. So Christian, those are the questions that we need to answer. You're the man on the ground in Bahrain, so good luck. Go get them.
Thank you very much. I've got plenty of people up my sleeve who I think can help us. Don't worry about that. We will introduce you to them in just a second. But let's start by getting some of those questions out the way right at the very start about preseason testing. Now, it's an absolutely vital moment in the season. F1 teams design a totally new car every year. And even if it's just a small evolution from their previous year, they simply don't know how fast it is or how reliable it is until testing, until where we are right now. It's also the first time they see rivals' cars, because when teams launch their cars, they keep secrets from us. They fit them with dummy bodywork so they don't reveal their real designs to their competitors.
That's so interesting to me, by the way.
It's so interesting. And
it's so just like behind the scenes.
But there's even chance for them to change a little bit more in the gap between testing and the first race of the season as well. But at testing, these secrets start to get out in the open. It's where the real cars and the results of all the hard development work over the winter start. But before official preseason testing starts, the teams are allowed to do a few laps. That's called a shakedown. A lot of teams do that at Silverstone. Williams, for example, did it here in Bahrain. It's really a chance to make sure the car literally works and switches on, and they drive just a handful of laps. But testing here in Bahrain is the first time the cars are properly put through their paces. It's also the first chance for the drivers to really give it some. That vital practice and prep time for them, because their first race of the season is just days away.
Well, given how important testing is, you'd think they'd be allowed to spend quite a bit of time, as much time as they'd like in Bahrain, running around, collecting data. But of course, that is not the case, especially here in Formula One.
Yeah, well, exactly, Katie. Testing in Formula One is heavily limited now to save money, to keep the impact on the environment down. So there are only 3 days of testing. In 2024, that's been between Wednesday the 21st, Thursday the 22nd, and Friday the 23rd of February. Now, the track's open for 8 hours a day, split into 2 4-hour sessions, and the teams are only allowed to run one car per session. So those sessions are split between the team's nominated drivers. So sometimes a driver might drive the whole day and another driver might get in the following day. Sometimes it'll be half and half. Very much depends from team to team.
Totally. And of course, if you've been with us long enough, you know that math is not necessarily my strongest suit, but I do know that that is 24 hours in total. And that's the only dedicated testing they get for the whole year. I imagine there is so much running on these testing for these teams. But the only other time teams have to try new things is in practice sessions during those race weekends. But those are more of like setting the car up and getting in prep mode for sure.
Yeah, that's about setting up the car for that particular race. So for example, free practice in Saudi Arabia would be about finding the right setup for the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. We're not at that stage yet of the season. Here at testing, it's about far more basic things like finding out if the car can do a race distance without breaking down or without running out of fuel. You know, it's not always clear how much fuel that the car is going to use at this point in the season. It's data gathering, it's learning how these machines work, these machines that they're going to be working with, you know, for the rest of the year, right up until a couple of weeks before Christmas.
Yeah, that's right. Christian, I'm going to let you go out and do what you enjoy doing the most, obviously running around the paddock and talking to people. By the way, first experience I had the chance to do that with you was in COTA, and my goodness, you absolutely do love running around that paddock and talking with people. So I'm excited that you're there. I'm excited to hear what you gather and to tell the stories as to what the people are saying.
I do like going to have a chat with people about Formula One. I'm going to do that right now, and Katie, I shall catch up with you a bit later. Okay, coming up, we'll speak to some of the drivers and focus on what pre-season testing means for them. But first, we're focusing on the teams, starting up towards the top of the paddock here at Mercedes, with a man who's often seen as team principal Toto Wolff's right-hand man. In fact, you can often see him in the garage next to the boss while the cars are on track, stood next to Toto. You'll have definitely seen him on the TV pictures when you're watching the races. It is the Mercedes director of communications, Bradley Lord. Shall we go find him? Bradley Lord, welcome to F1 Explains.
Thank you very much, Christian Hugo.
It's lovely to have you with us. Thank you for making your debut on the podcast. Take us back to basics first. What is pre-season testing?
A really good opportunity to confuse yourself if you're an F1 team. But no, what is pre-season testing more seriously? It's our only opportunity, so 3 days before the start of the first race weekend, to run through all of the checks, the verification, the reliability confirmations that you want to do as a team, and to try and confirm that your car is working as intended, as simulated, as you expect with all of the results that you have in your theoretical simulations in the wind tunnel, in the simulator, and all the other parts of the factory. Or it's the chance to find out it's not, and then start figuring out what you need to do about it.
Start trying to fix it. And testing in Formula One used to be quite a lot more open. It's quite heavily restricted nowadays, isn't it? There's these 3 days pre-season, a tiny little bit before that. Why is that? Why is testing in Formula One become so much more restricted?
Essentially, it started as a cost-saving measure. So 20 years ago, you'd have a separate test team, which was a brilliant way actually to introduce people to the team and to the race team. So many of the people you'll see up and down the pit lane today will have started their careers on the technical side and in the garage working in a test team. And yeah, we'd see cars pounding around pretty much between every single race. Obviously, there were fewer races back then, fewer flyaway races as well. So it was a different set of logistical demands on the organization. But we'd be, anytime we could be, we'd be at a track and, you know, sending it around that track to learn about the car, but also back then about tyres. When we were in a tyre competition, as was back in the mid-2000s between Michelin and Bridgestone, there was a huge amount of tyre development ongoing as well. And that's gradually come down over the last 20 years. In fact, started back in 2003 when teams were offered a trade of less private testing but extra running at a race weekend. And that was really the initial point, I think, where testing restrictions began to be introduced. And now we're all the way down, as you say, to two 200-kilometer filming days that we're allowed to use. We have some promotional or demonstration events that run to fit a grand total of 15 kilometers each. So as was last week for us, five laps of the Silverstone International Circuit, so half the Grand Prix circuit, and then these 3 days of 8 hours a day of testing, and that's it before we head into the first race. It also makes it a little bit unpredictable. We spend most of this week trying to work out where we stand on performance and not quite being sure. So it, you know, brings a little bit of suspense into the opening part of the season as well.
And this is longer than 15 kilometres. That's effectively a long run if you're fit enough, isn't it? This is a bit more than that over these few days.
Yeah, it's a mix of things that we're doing. We'll be doing sort of aero testing, and you'll see the rakes on the cars, so measuring all of the air pressures and trying to understand airflow and whether that's behaving as we expect from the simulation tools, either in the tunnel or in CFD. You've got short runs that understanding car balance, understanding tyre performance, and then long runs, which are reliability prove outs and, you know, important practice for the drivers as well, understanding how the car needs to be driven over a long run, how it wears its tyres, and how to best eke out that performance over, you know, the necessary distance of a race stint.
And on that, there's also the issue of wind tunnels. Now, you'll have been putting this car through a wind tunnel over the winter, but, and over the simulator, of course. But why is on-track testing different to wind tunnels and simulators?
All of those tools are just simulations. They're our best guess and approximation of reality. And as much as every team knows, there's still a vast amount more that all of us don't know and are still learning. And understanding how the car behaves in the real world, particularly with this generation of cars, where some of the phenomena that you see on track are incredibly difficult to replicate in the virtual world. So it's very, very hard in a wind tunnel to make a car bounce, for example, as we've seen porpoising affecting all the teams up and down the grid in the last two seasons. You can't reproduce that accurately and reliably in a wind tunnel. So there's nothing replaces the real world, and that's why these 3 days are so important.
Nothing beats on-track action, and at the end of that action, all of us Formula One fans are always used to paying vigorous attention to the timesheets at the end of the day, whether it's qualifying and seeing who's on pole or who's going to have to battle for the back, whether it's, of course, race wins and the all-important championship points. How important are those timesheets and those positions at the end of test days?
The timesheets themselves and the headline times are not really hugely important. They're not unimportant, they're not irrelevant, but they're not the thing that we're looking at as teams. As teams, we're looking at the entire map of the running and the entire picture, and then from there you start to be able to work out, okay, a car can only have been this heavy or could only have been this light. So if you do, you know, if a rival does a 10 lap run, they must have at least 10 laps worth of fuel in the car, so you know at least what the minimum starting weight was. And so you build up a picture of how fast, you know, a maximum and a minimum on what their performance might be for each of the rival teams. And as you collect more data, as you see fuel loads vary and you see short runs and long runs and race simulations, you start to refine that picture and get a more accurate idea of where your competition is and where you stand relative to that competition. But that picture builds with time. So it will be a better picture on day two than one, and a better picture at the end of day three than it is in day two.
And I guess another reason why the stopwatch can tell fibs in testing, and that picture can be that you've just described can be a bit difficult to understand, is a term you hear in testing thrown around a lot called sandbagging. What are we talking about in sandbagging in Formula One terms?
Yeah, I mean, sandbagging, whether anyone truly does that, I'm not quite sure. But what people are generally referring to is to the fuel levels at which teams choose to run their cars. And generally, if you've got a competitive car, if you're confident in your low fuel pace, you'll keep the car on relatively heavy tanks and running at a relatively high fuel load so that you can really be, A, having a stable baseline, so you know what you're comparing to and from. Like we all learned at school doing science experiments, you only change certain variables at a time, not all of them. But then also you're looking to really understand race behaviour, because ultimately what wins a championship is race pace, and preparing the drivers and doing the engineering work based on how the car's performing with fuel in rather than in the unusual condition of being empty of fuel as you would have on a qualifying lap is really the heart of the testing work.
Bradley, we've got brilliant listeners on this podcast. They're very kind to us. They send us lots of questions. They email f1explains@f1.com. One person who's done that is Mills from Kansas City. Mills asks, why do the teams not get to test their new cars until pre-season testing, which we touched upon a little earlier? And Mills also asks, why is testing set up the way it is? So we know why there's less testing than normal and why testing is not unlimited, as we've discussed. But I'm guessing, Bradley, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong, that these 8-hour days split up into two four-hour blocks must be helpful for the teams for doing good long runs. They're much longer than, say, a Friday practice session, aren't they?
They're definitely longer than a Friday practice session, yeah. I mean, the reason testing is set up as it is now, out here in Bahrain as well, is firstly stability of the weather. So it allows you to maximise the running time. You're unlikely to lose time to excessively cold weather, rain, snow, as we've even had at times in Barcelona, in Silverstone, when I've been at winter tests. And then also, it's a reflection of the growth of the sport. So testing now has a commercial value, and it's broadcast, and we see broadcasters here, you know, live for the 2 4-hour sessions and the lunchtime in between, a bit before and after. And again, it's about bringing a commercial value to what we're doing. So it's become much more of a sort of American style spring training than just quiet testing behind closed doors as it used to be.
I think I like spring training. I think you can rebrand it, Bradley. Anybody, you think you work in communications, that's excellent. And you also get people come out and make podcasts, would you believe? Now Zoe asks, what are teams actually trying to learn from pre-season testing, and what data are they collecting and how is it used? Now you've touched upon this, Bradley, but briefly, what are the sort of key bits of data, sort of testing 101, that you're really trying to look at in these 3 days?
So our program here this week is really focused on making big changes to the car, to try and learn how it's responding, how it's behaving, and where the sort of where the edges of the performance envelope and setup envelope are. So we're not really focused on getting the setup right for this circuit, because we've got 3 practice sessions next week to do that. It's all about doing base and fundamental learning about the car and how it responds to changes to guide development work later. And it's also about aero mapping, so that real world aero data collection that gives you a point of comparison to your simulation to then guide further development as well. Those are the two really key areas. And then also about helping the drivers understand what they need to do to get the most out of the car. So big explorations on setup and building your base fundamental core understanding of the product that you've made. That's the real focus this week. And then we start fine-tuning the the minutiae of the setup of the car for Bahrain. That will happen next week in practice.
And on that practice, so the one of Lewis or George in your guys' case will turn the car off on Friday. It'll then be 7 days until they're back in their car for free practice for the Bahrain Grand Prix. What, if anything, can be done in that time?
Well, if you've got performance development coming, that will be coming anyway. So that you'll have, if you've got new bits coming for Bahrain, mechanical or aero, they'll already be in the pipeline. What we'll be doing is then sending the drivers back to the simulator, and they'll be refining the simulator and sort of comparing the feel in the car to what they've got in the virtual world in order to improve that development tool as well. And then really the big job will be fixing anything that's gone wrong. So fault finding and fault fixing between this event and the first race, the guiding of performance development and sort of shaping development direction, that's a slightly longer term process than just the few days between the end of testing and the start of the race weekend.
And most importantly, is there any time in that gap to enjoy some of the sun in Bahrain? Any time at all?
Well, a chunk of the team will be flying home, so there's a Friday night overnight flight and then a debrief at 10 a.m. in the factory on Saturday morning.
Ooh, nice.
That most of the engineers will be in, and then a chunk of the team will stay out here, and we'll have a couple of days over the weekend of downtime before preparation starts for the race next weekend.
I think I'd like to be in that one, actually, having seen the pool and at the hotel I'm staying in and seen the weather around here. I think I'd like to be in that one. Bradley, I see over the race weekends you spend a lot of time in the garage next to Toto and that sort of thing. I'm now going to go and find someone who's exclusively grilled to the pit wall over at McLaren. So I shall leave you and run over to McLaren. But thank you for joining us on F1 Explained.
My pleasure. Great to talk to you.
Well, all the teams have their own little hospitality areas where they look after their crew and guests. And just down the road from Mercedes, where we were, is McLaren's. And we're joined just under some palm trees, just outside the McLaren hospitality area. We're joined by one of the nicest men in Formula One, their racing director, Randy Singh. Randy, lovely to have you on F1 Explains. Welcome.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
We really appreciate it. And Randy, you've got a long history in Formula One. You've worked a lot in strategy as well. What are racing directors, strategists, people on that side of the sort of pit wall looking at in pre-season testing?
Yeah, so from the racing director side, it's a new role for me, and actually it's quite simple. We just need to make sure that the right objectives are set for the test to make sure that we get the most learning out of it, for not only for the year but also for the race coming up next week. And from a strategy point of view, our main job is understanding the tyres and how they're behaving. Different conditions to the race, so it's a challenge, but also trying to understand their competitiveness, which is always the biggest question that anyone has during winter testing.
And you were chief strategist last year, as you just said, you had a background in strategy. Can strategists learn anything about what the car will be like in these test sessions?
Yeah, definitely. We can learn quite a lot. It's tricky, probably trickier than in a race weekend to learn, because people are running different car setups. They're running different car weights because you have lots of additional logging. They're running different fuel loads. So and here in Bahrain, from early in the morning when it's sort of sunlight and then it goes down to being dark, the temperature, the wind, everything, the track conditions change massively. So you can't easily compare someone doing something at 11 o'clock to someone doing it at 5 o'clock. So much trickier, but there's a lot that we try and learn from the test, not only for the race, but trying to understand where we'll be in the pecking order as well.
What do you typically learn? What are you able to typically learn from test sessions?
Yeah, there's a vast variety of things. Most teams will come to the test with a checklist of maybe even over 100 things to tick off, like
wow.
Signing off the fuel system, signing off every part of the car that the driver touches and everything. There'll be lots of performance stuff to do. So, you know, it's a brand new car for this year, like a large number of the components are new. So you want to check that it's performing as you expected from the simulator and the wind tunnel. Because we're in Bahrain for the test, as well as the race next week, there's a lot of it is learning about the race weekend, because in the race weekend, you're quite limited on what you can do. So you're trying to mix all of those three things up, and often in a single run, a single lap sometimes, we're doing multiple tests.
It's absolutely fascinating. Randy, got a few listener questions to run through with you, if that's all right. We've had a couple of questions about the special tools teams use at pre-season testing. Alice in Australia and Charlotte have both asked us the same question. They want to know about the brightly coloured FlowVis paint, as it's called, put on the cars. Why do you spray your cars with a strange-looking spray paint in testing?
Yeah, it's not to ruin the livery or the floor. There's a lot of cleaning up after the FlowVis goes on the car. The mechanics really don't like it. I'm not an aerodynamicist, but effectively, these cars at this stage have been in the wind tunnel. They've been in CFD, and they may have done a filming day, but very few laps. So one of the things we want to do is check that the airflow and the flow characteristics we expect around the car are what we expect. In the past, we've not done it for ages. People will tie a piece of string with a bit of paper on it, and it's for the same reason. You want to check what the air flow is doing, where the vortices are, etc. And so the FlowVis, you put the paint on the car, it's specially tuned to dry in a certain amount of time, roughly. You go around, it dries, and you come back, you take photos of it, and you analyse where the air has been flowing effectively.
So effectively, if you're spraying the car with paint and the air whizzes past the car, the air will make an imprint on the paint effectively.
Exactly, yep.
Amazing. And on a similar note, this one is from Dylan in Philadelphia. Dylan asks, during testing, you also see cars running around with these huge complex metal contraptions bolted to them. I think they look like a bit the side of a shopping trolley, but I'm guessing they're not. Dylan would like to know what they are and why they're used.
Yeah, some of them look like wonky shopping trolleys because they're all bent into weird shapes and stuff.
Exactly. So
those are what we call aerodynamic rakes. We put those on the car. So you see the metal frame is basically designed to hold up these little probes. So you'll see these little bits sticking out. Sometimes they're in a grid pattern. Sometimes they're in like a misshapen grid pattern. We saw some really funky ones over the last couple of days. And the idea is those probes stick out into the airflow and they can measure what's happening to the air. So what you tend to do is you put them in areas of the car where you really want to understand the airflow in detail. So where FlowVis maybe won't help because it's not on the car, it's just before it hits the car. So you see a lot of them are ahead of the front wheels to try and understand what the airflow is doing there. You have some at the back of the car, and effectively you measure the pressure on each of those probes and you can work out what the air is doing, and you try and build a picture of how the air behaves in reality compared to the wind tunnel.
It's absolutely fascinating technology, and yet it's got such an uncomplicated name, a rake. Spray paint and a rake, unbelievable. And just finally, Randy, one thing we always hear in testing from any team, it's not just McLaren, up and down the paddock, it's too early to tell. Is it really, just between us, at the end of testing, is it really too early to tell, or are you just trying to throw us all off the scent?
Honest answer, most of the time, after the last day of the test, when everyone's done their race simulations, you have a pretty good idea of the pecking order. You won't get it exactly right, and there's been a couple of years, actually one year I remember in like the 10 or so years I've done this, where we had a bit of a bum steer for one reason or another, which we understood. Most of the time you know the rough pecking order, but you really won't know the exact order until qualifying. And I think what makes it even trickier nowadays is the field is so tight that, you know, a tenth can be a couple of positions in qualifying. So this year I think it will be really tricky to tell after testing, anything other than like the grand order, like who's at the front, who's at the back, who forms like the rest, which could be pretty much every team.
So it probably is too early to tell.
Yeah.
I appreciate your honesty, Randy. Well, Randy Singh, it has been a delight having you on F1 Explains. And while we're at McLaren, I'm going to stick around in the hope of grabbing a chat with Oscar Piastri. He's a good bloke, Oscar. He'll have a chat to us, won't he?
Yeah, he's a lovely guy.
Back in a couple of minutes on F1 Explains. Welcome back to F1 Explains. Now, before the break, we were explaining why testing is so important for the teams. Time to focus on the drivers. Now, they are on track for hours at a time in the baking sun, lap after lap. Then they're analysing the data. They are incredibly busy in pre-season testing. But because Oscar Piastri is one of the nicest men in motorsport, we're grabbing him for a quick chat. Hello, Oscar.
Hello. Thank you. Thanks for that introduction. You're really making me sound good. Thanks.
It's true, you are a lovely man and you are very busy, so I'm only reporting facts. Pre-season testing, yes. Is it like getting to play with a new toy at Christmas for the first time?
Yes and no. It is like getting to play with a new toy at Christmas, but it's kind of like getting to play with a toy and everyone else, all your brothers and sisters have got toys, but you don't really know whose is the best until you've used it for a few days and then you really find out.
I love this analogy. So day one of testing is Christmas morning.
Pretty much,
day
yeah.
three of testing, you all know who actually got the best Christmas present. Well, I suppose you don't really, do you?
Day one of testing is kind of like you get your new present and then you really want to play with it and, you know, play with it as much as you can. But then you have a bunch of people tell you that you have to measure a whole bunch of stuff about the toy. And change stuff, so you can't really use it for the first few sessions. And then eventually they let you use it.
Eventually they properly yes. let you play with the toy. Yes. Now, when you do get to play with it properly, how quickly can you tell the difference from last year's car? How quickly do you feel that when you're a McLaren driver last year and you've stayed with the same team into this year?
Some things you can pick up pretty quickly, definitely. Especially, I think, now because the tyres are the same, the regulations have stayed the same, so there's, you know, some control variables in there. So you can pick up a few things, but again, it's quite difficult around somewhere like Bahrain because the grip's quite low, so even if you are in a super quick car, it never feels that great. The track temperature changes a lot during the day, so it makes life a little bit tricky to compare. And, of course, we haven't been here for 12 months, so everything's kind of moved on during the season. So then when you come back here, it's quite different. But, yeah, some things and sort of the, you know, whether you've got a good feeling car underneath you, you can tell pretty quickly. Whether it's quick or not usually takes a little bit more time.
You've just mentioned that your team tell you different things because obviously everyone's got their own priorities at testing. What, speaking purely as a driver, what are you looking for from testing? What are your priorities?
I mean, it kind of comes under two folds, I guess. The first one, from the team's point of view, is of course you want to be able to help the team as much as possible to make the car firstly quicker and, if you can, behave better as well. And I mean, as the drivers, we're kind of the best sensor in the car, I guess, in some ways, to help them with that. We do a lot of work on that to try and help the team make the car better, ultimately for us. But then also some driving things. You know, you're always trying to improve your driving, whether that's, you know, sort of qualifying performance or long run pace. There's certain things you can do independently of the team development too. So they're both, of course, very, very important, but both can be done at the same time.
Can I ask you what might be a daft question? I mean, it's never stopped me with interviewing you in the past, Oscar, asking you daft things, but what do you want to feel? When you go out and test a new F1 car in pre-season testing, is there a certain thing that you're like, I want it to feel this way?
I mean, different drivers will like different things, but, I mean, the first thing you want is a car that is predictable and you know what it's going to do. That's probably the most important thing, and You know, I'm sure, you know, that's what we all want. It's quite rare that we always have that, but that's the biggest thing. And then a balance that you like. So, you know, I think most people have a preference for either understeer or oversteer, but ideally, I think we all want it to handle pretty much perfectly and sure. do what we want. So the closer you can get it to that is better, is the best. So you want to make sure it's predictable firstly, and that, you know, kind of, I guess it ties into predictability, but doing what you want the car to do, whether that's from an oversteer or an understeer point of view, it's kind of all the same. But especially if you've got an oversteery car that's unpredictable, that's always pretty nasty. Understeer is a bit easier, but equally as frustrating. So you just want it to sort of do what you want it to at all points of the corner, really, which is why we complain so much, because the laws of physics only have their limits, unfortunately.
Which you F1 drivers would like to change the laws of physics, wouldn't you? It's
oh,
a shame.
We would love to.
Yeah.
We would love to.
McLaren are working on that, they assure me. Just finally, Oscar, how does it feel getting back into the swing of things after winter? I know the winter break in Formula 1 isn't as long as it used to be, and I know you drove the car very briefly in what they call a shakedown or a filming day for, you know, a handful of kilometres. Bradley Lord told us that earlier in the podcast. But this is your first time properly pounding it around the track, sun shining, lap after lap. Do you feel the difference from when you were last driving in winter, before the winter, for example?
Yeah, I think it's... I think even for me, just coming into testing this year, it's a very different feeling for me. You know, I've got a year of experience. I know everyone in the team now, which I didn't at this point last year. You know, I've got some clear goals that I want to work on from last year. I'm not coming into everything fresh, so it feels a bit more natural and normal this time around. Definitely, you know, some things I want to keep working on from, you know, the end of last season, and you know, just getting back into the swing of things. I feel like everyone kind of needs these couple of days to really get back on form. But yeah, I feel like I'm getting there and working on things I want to work on.
We wish you well in that. Oscar, we appreciate you coming on. You're going to be back in a couple of weeks with me and Katie.
I am,
explaining
yes.
Formula 2 and Formula 3, which you had quite a good time in those categories, didn't you?
Yes, yes, I did. They were good times, good times.
Good times. Oscar Piastri, thank you very much indeed. Now, there are other drivers who have a crucial role. Two reserve drivers. They're not quite as busy as Oscar here is, but let's head over to Alpine, where we find their reserve driver and ex-Formula 2 driver, Jack Doohan. Jack, welcome to F1 Explains for your debut.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm really looking forward to it. Excited to hop in the car and get going.
Jack, obviously, you're not in the car right now in pre-season testing in Bahrain because you sat talking to me, but you've done hundreds of laps of testing for Alpine. You also did the end of season test in Abu Dhabi last year. When you're testing for a team as a driver, what are you trying to achieve?
You know, putting myself in the position of the drivers right now, the engineers, everyone's been working on this right now. You know, not just for the end of last year. Obviously, the program for this testing has been, you know, has been in plans from November, December last year. But everyone's been working on this year for you know, years now. So everything that's happening right now, what you're doing is you're trying to come, obviously, to a level of yourself where you feel that you can extract the most from the car, which is why all three of us drivers were in Barcelona last week to, you know, get the cobwebs off, really get back in tune, you know, as racing drivers. But we're here now to be able to provide a baseline that we can go out and replicate each lap so that the engineers and everyone back at the factory knows that everything that they're testing is going to be to 100% accuracy. You need to be doing the exact same thing lap after lap, making sure that you're hitting your markers, driving the car in the same way, to know that we're getting all the right information and it's not being masked by the wrong things.
We often hear, us guys who watch Formula One, we hear the term feedback a lot. Oh, the drivers are giving feedback. What exactly does that mean? Once you do a test like this, or like the Abu Dhabi one or whatever, what sort of thing are you going back and saying to the team afterwards?
So typically, we're coming in from a run, you won't make any comments before the car is parked in the garage and plugged in, because until that point, your feedback or commentary is live for not only the world to hear, but also for other teams. So typically we speak with our engineers for between 3 to 5 minutes in the car, giving a brief summary about how the car was feeling, whether you were struggling with the front axle, the rear axle, just grip in general without going too far into it. And then post that, we have the post day meetings where we sit down and we really elaborate on that. We go into further depths, we speak about corner by corner, lap on lap, rather than just keeping it constructive and concise.
You're obviously here at pre-season testing in debriefs with Pierre and Esteban. The race drivers, they don't get that long in the car in pre-season testing. It's, a four-hour session at a time. Is that enough over the course of the sort of 3 half-days that they get? Is it enough to really know what the car's capable of?
It's very difficult to say. I guess it's enough to know potentially what the car's capable of for round one. But we all know as well how much these cars are evolving throughout the year. And, depending, we can know what the car is capable of in Bahrain, a circuit where there isn't, there is a mixture of high speed, very low speed, medium speed. It's really got it all here, but it's a very special circuit. The abrasive is quite different. The abrasiveness of the surface and of the circuit is quite different. We go from the likes of this circuit to somewhere completely different, in 2 weeks' time, where we're in Jeddah, a very smooth circuit, easy on the tyres, but it's just complete high speed and a street track. So you know where you are for a very short period of time, which is also great, because you can be, not in the best place and know that very quickly you can be where you want to be, or vice versa.
Well, there's so many different circuits on the F1 calendar, isn't it? You think then Jeddah's again so different to somewhere like Spain for Barcelona or Monaco. Again,
exactly.
It's constantly changing. I just wonder whether the teams, when you go out on a test, whether the teams ever tell you to drive in a certain way, if they're looking at a particular bit of how the car behaves, maybe. Is it possible that they'd say, keep it really smooth, or try this particular thing, or do you always just go out and do the same thing?
No, for sure, you're always adapting. At the end of the day, you need to push the car to an extent to be able to feel, to feel. Full stop. You need to be able to feel what it's doing. If you go out and drive at 80%, maybe an extent of the part that they're trying on the car is only going to be effective at 250 kph and over, of where the car is getting so stiff that now that's where you're going to feel the ride is starting to play a part and you might get instability. But if you're only driving at 80% through turn 12 here, the fast right hander here in Bahrain, you might be only hitting 240. From that point, the car's not squishing the bump stop as much, you're not being as stiff, you're not creating instability. So, long story short, they can dictate, yes, drive third gear here, keep the RPM a little bit lower. We're seeing how this is reacting and changing our deployment. But for actual feel of the car, you kind of always need to be able to add a percentage where you can replicate the limit.
And for all what you're talking about there in terms of the car, are you also looking at how the tyres behave and how the tyres behave with all of that stuff that you've just talked about with the car there? You've then got to match the tyres in as well, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. As you were saying, and as I briefly touched on, they can dictate how you can, try and alter your inputs, whether, like you were saying, with the tyres, that would be on, tyre management, on how much you're lifting, how progressive you are on throttle application, how you are with the brake pedal, and what gears you may be using to help with your energy deployment and with the team on the engine side of things. But, there's a lot that sort of can be dictated to how they want to run their testing.
One of our listeners emailed us before this testing started and asked about fuel tanks and whether the teams sort of run deliberately to empty or as close to empty as they can physically get to look at how much the tanks can cope with and how much fuel the new cars take out. And then on day one of this test, we saw Alex Albon have a really similar thing. I guess it is going back to real basics of even looking at how much fuel it's using.
No, exactly. You're looking at absolutely everything. It's coming to the point where some teams sometimes in a race, depending if they're going to be in a race where there's going to be lots of traffic, maybe potentially high on safety cars, you will underfuel the car. you know that you can potentially be in a draft train, you can do X amount of seconds of lift and coast per lap, plus you're going to have an estimated 2 safety cars per race, so we won't need the fuel tank, the full fuel tank anyway. However, they probably thought, okay, let's see how efficient we're running with, you know, maybe this amount of downforce. They were using, you know, X amount percentage of more fuel, and it put them over, and that's why we're here. We're here to test. Maybe they weren't exactly wanting to run out of fuel on track. That might have been a little bit over the edge, but they found that out very quickly. You know, it's a brutal reality, which I'm sure they were more happy to find out now than later in the year.
I can remember a couple of seasons ago, Lando going off and spinning and then going on the radio and saying, we wanted to look for the limit. We found it. We found the limit. I guess that's another one of those. It's like, well, we certainly found the limit. Look, when something goes wrong, that's what we're saying, the positive spin.
Exactly. And it's important to do that now and, you know, get it out of the way before stuff gets really real.
Just finally, Jack, you're a racing driver. You guys are all racing drivers. We all go into Formula One and into watching motorsport for the racing. How much do you enjoy, therefore, a test day? Is it something you can get, you know, your head into in terms of developing the car? Or for you guys that just love going wheel to wheel, can they be a bit of a drag?
No, it really also it depends on what you're testing, you know, how that is also structured. We have, you know, a lot of time in the simulator as well. Some sim sessions can be very long and, you know, very enduring. And then others, you know, you're doing something that potentially you're enjoying a little bit more. But in the end, it's either benefiting you, benefiting the engineers. You need to figure out, you know, to which area you're catering for, because at the end of the day, it all ends up making this all happen. You know, at the end of the day, I want to be in the car, not only testing, but I you know, I love the adrenaline. I love the feeling of having to perform, and where I get that and that sort of tingling sensation is, you know, in qualifying at the start of a race. So I want to be in the seat and in that position where I'm feeling that in the Formula One paddock very soon.
And a further advantage, you get the sun in Bahrain as well. Unlike when Formula One's gone to places like Barcelona in the winter before and it's been freezing. That's an advantage of testing.
Exactly. However, you know, Formula 2 and Formula 3 were here a week ago and it was pouring down with rain and freezing. So let's not jump too far ahead here, as that was quite an experience, I'm sure, for Bahrain.
Poor F2 and F3 got really unlucky. Well, we're glad the sun's shining. We're very glad to have you on the podcast. Jack Duren, thank you. It's been lovely chatting to you.
Thank you very much. It's been amazing.
Christian, it sounds like you've had loads of fun. What has the atmosphere been like? Can you really like pinpoint or give us an example?
The atmosphere, I'll tell you what it's like, Katie. You know when you start school again?
Oh.
And the school hall's been repainted, the gym's all clean.
Yes.
And all the teachers are in, but not all the pupils are yet. Like, only one or two year groups are back, and all the other year groups start next week. That's like what pre-season testing is. It looks like a Grand Prix. Everything's set up like a Grand Prix, but there's sort of only like a quarter of the people who would normally be at a Grand Prix. Not everyone started school yet. Some of you may start back next week.
Ooh, I like this example.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I love, like, everyone has their, like, they have their new backpacks on and their new, like, school uniforms on, and everyone looks clean and crisp, but yet, you're right, it's not quite the first day of school yet. Ooh, like this.
Exactly. And of course, it's the first time all season where you get sort of proper paddock gossip. You get everyone saying, well, did you see
any
that this happened?
Yet?
Well, to be honest, well, but that was what I was about to say. We can all gossip, but the reality is pre-season testing gives us a hint of what's to come. But it's just that. It's just a hint, because there's been plenty of times in pre-season testing where you've had 3 days of running and everything looks like it's heading in one direction. And then come qualifying for the first race of the season, it goes a completely different way. Because we've had teams, as we discussed earlier in the podcast, doing things like sandbagging. That means putting more fuel in the car than expected. People keeping surprises from each other. So testing definitely gives us that little bit of a hint. But in true F1 form, the only time we're going to know about the true pace of these cars is when the lights go green in a competitive session. That's when we know things for sure.
Yeah, well said. Well said. You're really good at your job here. That was really nice, Christian.
Oh, thank you, friend. That's very nice of you. I appreciate that.
Thank you for giving us all the little snippets of preseason testing. That's all we've got time for now. But don't forget, this week we have 2 episodes of F1 Explains for you. What a cool week we've got going on. Next time, we're joined by the executive producer of Drive to Survive to find out how that team follows a whole season of F1 to make that show come alive. Christian, have you seen them around yet?
Yes. In fact, some boring radio production information for you here. The Wi-Fi is much stronger at this end of the paddock, Katie. So before I spoke to you, I went down from where Formula One's office is based up by Red Bull at the top to sort of McLaren, who are based about halfway through the paddock. And there was four Drive to Survive camera people all sat relaxing. And I'm fairly sure that's the only time in my history of covering Formula One I've seen the Drive to Survive crew sat down. They've got a break.
Yeah, that's right.
So they're enjoying that while they can, because the rest of their season, as we're going to find out in the next episode, is very, very busy. So I caught a rare glimpse of the Drive to Survive camera team sat down and having a break.
Oh, that's pretty incredible. Plus, don't forget to treat yourself to an F1 TV subscription for the new season to keep up with all of the action there in Bahrain ahead of the first race of the season. And of course, keep those questions and voice notes coming in. F1 Explains at F1.com. Me and Christian are back so soon. From me in the U.S. and Christian in Bahrain, bye for now.
Bye.